chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program going this evening. We're going to start off with an interview that Alex Jones had with General Michael Flynn, and he's warning about let's cool this thing down. Let's just settle it down on this Ukraine situation and crisis that is ongoing, because he said it's getting very dangerous. And he, at the time that he was interviewed, he was headed to the valley, and he said some important things about trying to straighten out our own border problems, much less a conflict that might possibly result between the Ukraine and Russia. So here we go with that really good interview. Then we're going to follow it by a short interview that McDonald, the evening edit, had with Peter Schweitzer, his new book, Red Handed. And I ordered and got a copy of that, and I'm going to make a few comments myself. But first, here we have with Alex and General Flynn.
The worst case scenario in this case, as I started to look at this buildup and this what I call road to war, is this movement where you start to talk about nuclear weapons and people that are talking about World War III. I mean, this is not going to be some, you know, movie, right? This is real. And in a World War III scenario, which people in Washington, D.C., people in the legislative branch, some of these senators, some of these members of Congress, some of these people in the National Security Council, some of these think tankers, they are all like beating the drums like we should be ready to go. We should go. No. Take a deep breath, everybody. I think that we are going to see, and I expect something, again, another distraction. You know, I really do. I expect, because of what was staged on January 6th and what was staged up in Michigan to kidnap, you know, the fake kidnapping of the governor up in Michigan, Whitmer. I think we're going to see staged events. I really do. I mean, I really do think that. Do not put past this administration, but their thugs in some cases that they have access to, do not put it past them to stage something and then declare some type of national emergency in order to further shut down aspects of our freedoms. I believe that. So, you know, and I tell that to people, and I'm telling it to you, and I'm telling it to your audience. You know, in 30 seconds, it has to do with this beautiful country that my father, who was a World War II and Korea War veteran, and my mother, who decided to have 9 children, thank God, they handed my family, my generation, our generation, Alex, a beautiful country on a silver platter and said, you know, go forth and do good, be good to others, and work hard, and you'll have a good life. And our generation has screwed this up. And so when I look at my children and my grandchildren especially, that's my long game. So pay attention, people. Discover, learn, read, do whatever you got to do. And follow this great show, because Alex has been right on for over a decade.
Well, he doesn't need any introduction on this Friday, January 28th broadcast. He's General Flynn, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, former top advisor, national security advisor to President Trump, and of course, a embattled individual in the fight for this republic. He wrote a very important article that I saw, widely syndicated, exclusive from General Flynn. Biden might get hundreds of millions killed over Ukraine. And then Biden was in the news last night with statements like, brace for impact to the capital and to the president of Ukraine trying to really escalate things. So we couldn't have a better expert, because he is a China and Russia expert, on than General Flynn. General, thank you. I know that you're on the road on your way to McAllen, Texas. You're in Houston right now to survey the collapsed border. So thank you for stopping on the road to do this quick interview.
Absolutely, Alex, and thanks so much for having me. And you have a great audience, and I want to just thank that your terrific audience for supporting me. So thank you.
Well, absolutely, sir. We love the great work you're doing for this republic. So please get into this editorial that came out a few days ago, and then since then, a lot has developed. What you really think is happening? Because I'm not a military mastermind like you, but it looks to me like Biden's trying to distract from all of his problems here at home by trying to start some type of proxy war with Russia.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, these are people that are masters of distraction, in the White House today and in running our government, running our intelligence agencies, running our Department of Defense. So the reason why I wrote that article is because when I look at Russia, you know, Russia has really three big problems. They have a historic problem, they have a geographic problem, and they have a cultural problem. And, when you have this historic problem, which is really Europe and NATO and this continued encroachment, I mean, I really think that we have to take a step back and look at the historical perspectives that we are all facing, and particularly in the decision making when it comes to the potential for going to war. When you have nuclear powers, you know, vis-a-vis Russia and the United States of America at a potential, stance against each other with some of the incredibly stupid foreign policies that we have coming out of our White House, which are just showing enormous weakness, and all the other adversaries that we have, like China, like Iran, like North Korea, they're all watching what it is that is going on. And I think that a couple of weeks ago, probably I'd say a month ago, Putin probably wasn't where he's at, but he has seen such weakness in Biden. And you know, I think there's so many things that we have to take into perspective here. So, you know, the recent phone call by the White House by Biden to Ukraine President Zelenko, I think that, we have to understand what kinds of things they discuss, and there'll be bits and pieces that'll come out of that. But we're really talking about the standoff between the United States and Russia. And this is really, to me, strategically, this is really a European problem right now. That's why I'm getting ready to go to down on our Texas-Mexican border here to rally for our own border, because, you know, we're getting so worried about the Ukrainian border all of a sudden. This is a European problem, and I think we can talk about Germany. We can talk about some of the issues with where the Germans stand. I mean, this is a really very, very serious time. I wrote that article because I wanted people to understand who read it that we are talking about the potential for nuclear powers and this increasing rhetoric about going to war. I've seen people that serve or served in that White House, the current White House, talking about World War III, the foreign policy think tanks, the defense think tanks out of Washington, D.C., want to continue to drive us to a war with Russia. And we cannot afford it right now, number one. But number two, this is not really our problem. This is a European problem, and I think that Europe needs to resolve this as much as Russia needs to resolve this.
Well, since you raised that, a very respected head of the German Navy resigned last week. I think you were alluding to that, and said some really important things about China's the enemy. Russia wants to work with us. They're becoming more Western than even us. Putin talks about how we need to become Christian in America. Russia needs to become Christian. Putin says we need to have children. We need family values. And is not trying to expand its borders, while China, it seems, has taken over the world. You were one of the main architects that convinced, I think, one of the few good things Obama did, but you're credited with convincing Obama and others to pivot towards China. Now it's clear that China is expansionist. Why do we see this move away from confronting China and confronting Russia?
Well, I think that there's a lot of reckoning that has to take place, and I think that world of journalism could do some more investigations when it comes to, because we're not, you know, maybe we want to talk a little bit about, you know, Hunter Biden and Burisma and Hunter Biden and the CCP and the intelligence community of the Chinese.
Yes, sir. Take us wherever you want. You've got the floor. Tell us.
Yeah, big deal. So, you know, there is this focus, this over-focus on Russia, and always has been, particularly from those left-leaning institutions in this country, and basically away from China. You know, the sharks are in the water right now, smell blood when it comes to the stupidity of the foreign policy of this administration. So again, I'm going to go back to Russia. Russia has three principal problems, historic. I just mentioned Europe and the historic problems with Europe. They have a geographic problem with China, and they know it, and they have to deal with it. And we're talking eight time zones in Russia, and a lot of it touches on their border with China. That geographic border has a lot of challenges for them, and they have to deal with it. That's just that's the neighborhood that they're in. And then the third problem is cultural, and this gets to the heart of what you just asked me and what this German chief of naval operations actually, I think he was alluding to. I mean, the cultural problem is the rise of Islam and radical Islam and Islamists inside of the Russian Federation. When you look at the southern tier of nations all the way over to places like, you know, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and into the Central Asian Republic. So Putin sees all of these things, and he's got to deal with every single bit of it. And I think that, you know, if you can put that German naval officer's link on your site today, people can understand kind of this is a very serious guy. I know who this guy is, and I think that he was right in what he said, because China is the principal adversary that we face. I'm looking at this from a military perspective. People in the State Department, they can look at them as colleagues if they want. I don't look at them as colleagues. I'm talking about China. I look at China as a nation state that is in the pockets, or they have us. They have this administration in their pockets. And we really are having a difficult time. And I'm going to tell you, while Russia is considering whatever they're going to do, while Europe is considering whatever they're going to do, and you can see the political leaders of Germany, they don't want anything to do with war with Russia, because if they do, their Nord Stream oil pipeline gets cut off, their access to energy. I mean, one of the things that Trump did during the Trump administration was he took this issue on, and he made the United States of America energy independent. Well, now all of a sudden we're not energy independent. So whenever a guy like Putin can raise the barrel of a price of oil, which he does, and he takes advantage of Europe, which he can, it's because the United States of America is showing incredible weakness. When we are energy independent, meaning we're taking care of ourselves from an energy perspective, but we also can take care of the rest of the world, Alex, I mean, then there's a lot more leverage. There's a lot more strength. And we don't have that right now. And that was one of the first things that the Biden administration did, was they started to shut down our energy independence, our pipelines. I mean, just incredible. So there's a series of issues that are in play right now. And when we talk about war in Europe, this is not a small thing. And I think that in Putin's case, I think that he has the upper hand when it comes to Biden, and he knows it, because he knows all of the crookedness, particularly when it comes to the kinds of things that the Biden family got involved in Ukraine with Burisma, right? I mean, with Hunter, I don't know what he was getting paid, you know, $60,000 a month or something for his energy expertise. Give me a break. And so these kinds of leverages are held over this administration. So regardless of whatever the conversation was that Biden had with the president of Ukraine, I think all of it amounts to nothing more than another demonstration of weakness, particularly in terms of the foreign policy of this administration, this current administration that's in there, and all the other adversaries that we have, like China, like Iran, like North Korea. Let's just see what these other countries start to do. Let's see what kind of pressures the Chinese start putting on Taiwan. I can tell you, I watch the Japanese media. I watch the Japanese media on a routine basis, probably every day, if not every couple of days, to see what their sense is in their country about the Chinese incursions over the Taiwan Straits. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of concern. And I don't feel right now that the Japanese feel like they can count on this administration to stand strong with them. I know that we have a great military-to-military relationship, but when it comes to the foreign policy, this administration is showing extraordinary weakness. And I mean, I just think it's just stupid. I mean, I think the foreign policy right now is just stupid. When you start to listen to these defense and foreign policy think tanks that in Washington, D.C., that want nothing more than the United States to get back into another war where we're continuing to participate, you know, instead of getting in there and fighting and winning and getting out and with clear objectives, I mean, I'm very concerned right now, and that's why I felt compelled to write that article.
Well, it's very important, and I'd like to walk through a few of the points that you've mentioned here. What do you make of even Republican senators saying things a few months ago like, we might have to nuke Russia first, first strikes, and other statements like that, and then Biden saying a week and a half ago, okay, we don't care if there's a small incursion by Russia. And the next day saying, no, you know, any incursion, we may take military action. Then the next day saying, no, we'll never have military action. NATO threatening to attack, then saying, no, we'll never do that. I mean, this seems like the worst policy is to go hot and cold off and on. That sounds like how you'd try to start a war to me. Being an expert on this at the Pentagon level and White House level, when you look at this, what does this signal to the world? I mean, is there even any strategy here? Or is it just a bunch of crazy leftists that have hijacked the country in a stolen election and don't know what they're doing?
Well, a couple of things. So first of all, there was a there was some type of a leaked article or leaked communication recently by one of the media outlets, and it had to do with Victoria Nuland. Victoria Nuland, who's one of our state, you know, senior State Department you know, directors, and it's interesting. We're so much more deeply involved in this Ukrainian issue than most Americans would want. That's number one, and I think that people need to know that. American people need to know that. I would tell you, for all these people that get up and tout all these things that we should do, what I would ask people to do, and that's what I really has said or stated, was we need to take a deep breath, and we need to step back. And this is where relationships do matter. It doesn't mean that you have to like somebody. It just means that you have to have a relationship with somebody so you can pick up a phone, call them up, and you're talking to them on an equal or even a stronger foundation or basis. And this is why I think where in the case for the, you know, for Donald Trump, and I'll go back to his administration, because I think he had actually a very sort of man on man or president on president strong relationship with Putin. They didn't always agree on everything. And I can tell you, Trump never gave in to him. If you just followed along with what kinds of things that the Trump administration did over the time that he was the president, when it came to Russian relations. But we have to have these types of strong relationships with the leaders of these countries.
And isn't that what the head of the German Navy said when he resigned? He said, we got to get eye to eye with these people. That's how we're going to stop wars. We got to get real.
Exactly. I mean, it's not just a call to the Ukraine president. I mean, they're in the middle. This is why is the president of the United States dealing, you know, and again, this gets back to, you know, having zero relationship or having a relationship where it's one of weakness. And you're afraid. He's afraid to make this call and afraid to see what's going to be said. And I think that all that we really need to do here is we need to talk. We need to take a step back. We need to see who has the strongest relationship, and we need to get involved. You know, at that level, not the president of the United States talking to the president of Ukraine. Why isn't the president of the United States calling up Putin and saying, hey, look, you know, we don't want to go here. And this is, let's figure out how we can move around this. But the reason why.
Exactly. So why would Western establishment that's always been engaged with foreign countries, especially superpowers, be paralyzed? Because what you're describing sounds like people that are asleep at the switch.
Yeah. Well, the big message to our adversaries is one of weakness. And it's not just people that are asleep at the switch. These are people who look at foreign policy as a way to enhance their own equities, and particularly in this particular administration, to distract. Because I really do believe that, and I say this, I think maybe I said this at the very beginning, these are people who are masters of distraction. I mean, the fact that we're up now talking about Ukraine, you know, we're not talking about the lockdowns and the mandates. We're not talking about that. This is why I'm going to the border today. The Mexican Texas border, Mexico-Texas border. This is why I'm going down there today to visit it and then have a big rally down there. And it's because we need to start to look at what's happening domestically, and we need to really pay attention to it. This administration is causing us to look in places where we really don't have huge national security interests. And the reason why we are where we are in the Ukraine is because of just incredible weakness and, frankly, stupid foreign policy. And I use that word, you know, just what it means, stupid. I mean, these are people who have gotten us into this mess because of all of the things that we have allowed to happen. And I go back to this business about energy. Energy is a big deal globally. And when Russia is providing Germany, I think they're providing like 70%. And then the Germans then export that around Europe. So They're providing them like 70% of their energy needs right now into Germany. So, you know, what does Germany have to say about all this stuff in the Ukraine? I'd be interested. And I think we're going to see very little coming out of there. I think from a military perspective, I think they talked about sending some helmets or something like that. I mean, you know, I do not want to get involved in a conflict in the Ukraine, because I just don't see the objectives. I don't see what it is in terms of our national security interest. I don't think Putin does either, to be honest with you. I really don't think Putin does, but I think that what we have to do is we have to develop and get better at these relationships, but we're not going to get it. Sadly, we're not going to have it, Alex, under this administration. This administration has blown it. Our foreign policy is in a state of shambles right now. And when we start to, I don't use in my article, the article that was written there, I don't talk about nuclear weapons in a very, in a light way. I mean, when we talk about the use of nuclear weapons or the capabilities of nuclear weapons, and let me tell you something about Russia. Russia is no lightweight. Russia and Putin, particularly in the time that he's been in charge, I mean, he's developed some very sophisticated technology, some sophisticated weaponry. They have increased their level of readiness and training. I mean, they do a lot of annual exercises, and we paid very close attention to them, and I still do. I watch who they're trading with and their relationships with and what kind of technologies they have in their military and their ability to communicate and their cyber capabilities. I mean, this is a very, very sophisticated enemy, and we cannot take them lightly. And frankly, in terms of our military, I pray that our military and our leadership is more focused on fighting and winning our nation's wars, which is what it's designed to do, instead of worrying about what critical race theory is going to be or continuing to shove these jabs into the arms of our troops who frankly are trying to fight that back. So, I mean, we have our priorities, Alex. We have our priorities right now so upside down, and we are in a very, very dangerous position here for the United States of America going forward, not only with the Ukraine, but in the Indo-Pacific basin, particularly when it relates to Taiwan. And I know you got listeners in Japan that pay attention to this, and I know they'll listen to this. You know, we stand with Japan. We always have stood with Japan. And I know the Japanese are very, very concerned about the foreign policy decisions. And I will go back again to the relationships, because I think that the compromised people in the White House and the compromised people around this particular president, and I mean, you know, within his own family, everybody knows it, Alex. Everybody knows it. You know, if this were Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump, oh my God. But since it's Hunter Biden, nobody does anything. Nobody says anything. I mean, I listened to Peter Schweitzer the other day talking about some of this stuff. It's just more and more things keep coming out. And so these people are compromised. They know exactly what's happening because they've been able to infiltrate right inside of our decision-making system.
Yes, the Chinese have been able to infiltrate inside some of our major institutions. And red-handed was a book written by Peter Schweitzer. He was interviewed just recently this week by Evening Edit McDonald. So here we go with that brief interview, and then I'll make some comments after that.
Joining us now, Peter Schweitzer. He's author of the book Red-Handed, How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win. It's great to have you on, Peter. There's so much to talk about. First this, what documentation did you use for the book? Because Democrats in D.C. are saying this is another smear campaign.
Yeah, it's not a smear campaign. It's based on facts. There's 100 pages of footnotes in the book. We only use open source information. That means Chinese corporate records. That includes court documents, materials developed by the United States Senate. So you can look at the footnotes and you can find exactly the sourcing that we're using.
And Treasury documents about cash flows, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's all open source information. We don't use anonymous sources. And the fact of the matter is that it's all very straightforward. What we did use also was the Hunter Biden laptop, and we used information that was the emails from one of Hunter Biden's business partners. And what it demonstrates is that this was not just a story of corruption and cronyism. It involves a very troubling intelligence component in a lot of these dealings.
Yeah, let's stay on that. What concerns you most about the conflicts of interest you found in the Biden family? You say they're doing lucrative deals worth tens of millions of dollars with Chinese companies tied to the equivalent of China's KGB. And by the way, the White House has never denied, or Hunter's never denied, both of them have never denied the content of what's in the laptop. So talk to us about that. What worries you most?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What worries me most is we first broke the story on these commercial deals with the Biden family in China back in 2018. What we've done is taken the new material and tried to figure out who made those deals happen in China. And in every one of the cases, those are businessmen that have ties to the highest levels of Chinese intelligence. What do I mean by that? Well, the private equity deal where Hunter Biden was put on the board of this private equity company financed by the Chinese government. That deal was done by a Chinese businessman named Che Feng. When he was doing that deal with Hunter Biden, he was business partners with the vice minister for the Ministry of State Security in China, a guy named Ma Jian. Ma Jian's responsibility was the recruitment of foreign nationals to spy on behalf of China. Another one of the businessmen that was involved in that deal who also transferred $5 million to another one of Hunter Biden's businesses is a guy named Mr. Zhao. His business partner at the time was the family of the former Minister of State Security who ran the entire spy apparatus of China. So the question is, why did these businessmen hand this money over to the Biden family? And I don't think it's philanthropy. I don't think it's business. There's no discernible business services that Hunter Biden performed for this money. I think we have to start looking at the notion, investigating the fact that the Bidens may be compromised in what was a Chinese-backed intelligence operation.
Yes, in the early 2000s, former Vice President Biden was – and Senator Biden was deeply in debt. He had a negative net worth of like negative $52,000. By the way, what is the fallout of Nancy Pelosi's family ties to China?
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi is another example. There are also Republicans as well. But in Nancy Pelosi's case, she used to be actually pretty critical of Beijing. Then something happened in the late 2000s. Her husband hooked up in a series of deals on mainland China, and her son also went to Beijing looking for deals, and her position evolved. All you have to do is look at the 2000 Olympics in Beijing. Remember those were held. Nancy Pelosi initially favored a boycott of those Olympics, but then it turns out the two limousine companies that her husband was part owner of got lucrative deals ferrying VIPs around Beijing for the Olympics. And she literally changed her position to no longer supporting a boycott. So you've seen an evolution with Nancy Pelosi. And it's important to point out that really since COVID happened in January of 2020, she has refused to allow a single hearing in Congress and in the House of Representatives on the origins of the COVID virus.
Wow. And now China's making inroads with deals in Central America and weighing in on the Ukraine-Russia crisis and lecturing the U.S. about that. Peter Schweitzer, we'll have you back on. We want to do a longer interview with you and go more deeply in this because we're going to stay on this story going forward. It's good to have you on, Peter. Good luck with your book. Come back soon.
That book blows the lid off of the people that sold out to China, and that's the top echelon that he lays out there in this book. Go get Red-Handed by Peter Schweitzer. It's an excellent book, and I couldn't recommend it more highly than anything else to read right at this time. So you've got to really get in there and read this. Well, coming up next is an excerpt from a panel discussion held by Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson in Washington, D.C., about COVID. And we're going to cover that right now because it's so important. And I've got several doctors in a row that make some very, very insightful things. And then I'll make some comments after you listen to this. Here we go next with this panel discussion and some excerpts. All of these full interviews will be on ClickOffs on thesecrettruth.com for January 29th today. Saturday, January 29th, I'll have the full, interviews that you can click on and listen to the full. I'm just putting up excerpts, but you'll have click-offs on thesecrettruth.com for this day's broadcast where you can go in and listen to the total interviews. But here we go with that panel discussion right now. Very important.
People have said this are mRNA vaccines. mRNA only always goes to protein, and we can't do anything. First, we know that people have reverse transcriptase. Yes, it can make DNA. Yes, it can go back into the DNA. But there's something else about RNA. RNA can make little hairpin loops. RNA can regulate your DNA. So when you put an mRNA vaccine or RNA into your body, it can get in, and it can be alternately spliced, can bind to your DNA, and it can regulate it. For positive or for negative, it can change your gene expression, and there's stuff in there that can do that either intentionally or unintentionally, and we don't know. It's completely unethical because we are just beginning to understand RNA silencing, where these RNA molecules regulate our DNA. So that makes it completely unethical to use this technology.
We have to get on to there are great unknowns with respect to the vaccines, their mechanism of action, and disease categories like cancer. But there is a disease category upon which the FDA, the CDC, and all stakeholders agree that the vaccines cause, and that's myocarditis or heart inflammation. Now, I will tell you, as a cardiologist, it is crystal clear that these vaccines cause myocarditis. Dr. Parks has already quoted the paper by Avolio that has shown beyond a shadow of a doubt the vaccines cause myocarditis. The FDA indicates for Pfizer and Moderna that they cause myocarditis. We now have over 200 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on myocarditis, sadly showing the rates of myocarditis are far in excess of what the CDC ever imagined. We've identified that boys are have a predilection for this far more than girls. The maximum age group, the peak age group, is age 18 to 24, so it's actually the college age. The risk extends up to age 50. And I can tell you that in this age group, it is clear the risks of the vaccines are far greater than the risks of COVID-19, the respiratory illness. Two papers, one by Tracy Hogue at UC Davis, one by Ron Kostoff, that these papers have been presented at the FDA meetings. They have not been challenged as analyses. One, and there are now fatal cases of myocarditis published by Washington University in St. Louis, by Verma, and by Choi from South Korea. More fatal cases accrue. There is the father of a boy here in this room who's died of myocarditis. One death is too many. One. We have 21,000 cases of myocarditis and climbing in the United States that the CDC has verified. One was too many. Under no circumstances, under any circumstances, should a young person ever receive one of these vaccines, let alone ever be pressured to receive a vaccine, let alone ever be mandated to take a vaccine. This is crystal clear. The FDA agrees. There can be no controversy over this. There can be no normalizing of this to say that it's mild or it's transitory.
Well, talk about that, because that's what I say. It's mild. Is myocarditis mild?
I'm telling you, as a specialist, myocarditis is not mild. There are papers by Schauer and by Truong at University of Utah at Salt Lake. When they do MRI on these individuals with suspected myocarditis, 100% are having heart damage. 100%. We have a paper by Tashopi and colleagues looking at the outcome of individuals prior to COVID in this age group with myocarditis. 13% will have permanent heart injury. 32% never actually get up to normal. They don't get back to normal. We are seeing unprecedented numbers of athletes dying on the field in Europe. Unprecedented. Of these cardiac arrests, half of them don't come back. We now have a report out of the heart group in the UK where actuarial mortality for those under age 15, mortality in the UK is higher than expected.
Dr. Malone.
Just real quick, going back to Mr. Renz.
I wonder if Dr. Malone could follow up on that.
Just real quick, because we're talking about myocarditis. What concerns me so much about the whistleblower report there is this is the only vaccine injury that the CDC, FDA are acknowledging. And you combine that with the fact that there's at least suspicions that the Defense Department is doctoring with the data in their database affecting myocarditis. I mean, I'm sorry, that gets my suspicion antenna.
And the recommendations and the mandates are ignoring the FDA warnings.
I would contend, Senator, that there's not just a suspicion. In August, when the report was run on acute myocarditis in the DOD website, there were 1,239 cases, and now when you run it, it's down to 307. In January of 2022, there were 176 cases, and magically, they are now down to 17. There is a word for that. It's not suspicious. We have in the military the single best data set that exists because we have baselines in there. And acute disease across all categories in the preceding years, 5 years leading up to the vaccination year was 1.7 million. They introduced and mandated a COVID-19 vaccine for our U.S. military when they had only lost 12 service members total to the disease. And in the 10 months of 2021 after that, it jumped from 1.7 million all diseases to darn near 22 million. That was a 20 million increase. We need to not be calling this suspicious. With all due respect, we need to be asking hard questions of the DOD, and I will close by saying they are charged, at least in part, with protecting the sanctity and welfare of the brave men and women who are defending this country. And right now, these numbers indicate something is drastically wrong, and I know of only one reason that databases roll math backward.
So who are you? Identify yourself.
So sorry. My name is Lee Dundas. I'm a human rights attorney that's working with Tom Rentz on the whistleblower issue in the military. I would ask that Congress listen to these whistleblowers, put their testimony on record. These are brave men and women of very high rank in the U.S. military, because not just do we, Congress, in this building need to hear about it, the world needs to hear about what is going on.
Well, I will listen to them. We will take their transcribed interviews. We will gather their data. And again, I put the Defense Department on notice. They must preserve these records so we can investigate.
And
thank you.
By the way, I have to show you. This is what we get when I investigate. I mean, this isn't to do with this, but this is after a couple of years trying to get information out of another agency, and we finally get the information, and it's all redacted. This is how the federal government, the agencies, comply with congressional oversight.
We're glad to share with you, Senator, because we have quite a bit of those that aren't blanked out. And we also want to tell you, listen, the side effects, the only one that they're recognizing, that's an outright lie. I've got the Pfizer documents. Pfizer said in their FOIA documents that they released, they said, we're looking for these side effects. The FDA said, we're looking for these documents. We've got their documents showing what they're looking for. They're not sharing it with the American people because they're covering this up. Corruption was the word of the day, and I think it needs to be reiterated.
So somebody really quick in the testimony talked about what the drug companies were supposed to turn over when they made application. Yeah, Dr. Carrier, talk about that specifically. I mean,
so on the day in which the Pfizer vaccine was authorized under federal regulatory law, that data had to be made public to the American people. By data, I mean the clinical trials data that Pfizer submits to the FDA, that the FDA then reviews and decides whether or not we're going to get.
And why wasn't it?
Was there
a waiver granted by FDA?
Or? No. What they said was, we have a lot of FOIA requests, and they didn't deny that they had to release it eventually, because that would have obviously contradicted federal law. So what they said instead was like, even though we have a budget of $6 billion, I think it is, we only have a handful of employees to handle these FOIA requests, and, they have to make a lot of photocopies of these documents.
Now a judge has ordered the release, not at 500 pages.
8 months.
55, yes. Yeah. We'll get that sooner. We're running out of time. I did want to talk about some of the other revelations. You mentioned FOIA. The FOIA for Japanese regulators showed that this vaccine's not staying in the muscle, as we were kind of all led to believe it would happen.
It's actually animal studies from.
It's biodistributing. We know the nanolipid particle, and it also goes through some of these very difficult permeable barriers, for example, the brain.
I want to ask Dr. Malone that question, because I worked with lipid nanoparticles for chemotherapy. They are like garlic. They go everywhere. They can, you know, they can slip through a door crack. They go through very tight junctions. That's what they do. That's why when I first saw the technology, I knew it was going to end up in the brain, because that's one of the things they were doing, was trying to find lipid nanoparticles to carry chemotherapy.
Talk about the concern about it getting into the brain.
Well, that was the actual original design for lipid nanoparticles to be used in chemotherapy, because in order to direct chemotherapy to the brain, it's very difficult. So they were going to use lipid nanoparticles to do it. The problem was the lipid nanoparticles went into ovaries, bone marrow, adrenal glands, and other tissues. So it's still being worked on. Studies are still being done. But I was going to ask Dr. Malone, because Dr. McCullough had just talked about the fact that he has concerns. Do you have concerns for this vaccine in children, knowing that it's going in the brain, the bone marrow, the adrenals, and all these other organs?
So the answer is yes. I've said that repeatedly. I've put out a 4-minute clip in which I talk about the damage at risk to children in brain, heart, coagulopathy, reproductive systems, and immune systems. That resulted in direct attack from the Israeli Ministry of Health on my personal reputation. Multiple fact checkers denying it, but the data are incontrovertible. But to your point, Richard, and Jill and I can attest, you know, I do have some credibility here because I did create this technology. I do know in detail.
I can speak. But you don't work for the CDC, NIH, and FDA.
No, I actually work for the DOD from time to time. So I do know about the untranslated regions, why they're there. I do understand explicitly in detail about reverse transcriptase and what it can do, et cetera. But I can tell you that we moved off of trying to develop further these mRNA and DNA complexes based on our work in non-human primates and in mice. We spent years with both commercial funding and various public funding, not NIH, trying to advance this technology. Many, many different ketonic lipid formulations, compounds tested, screened for toxicity. We could never overcome the hyperinflammatory characteristics of these polynucleotide ketonic lipid complexes. We could never get there. Now, the Carrico and Weissman assertion, and it's inside baseball. I brought Katie Carrico into this like a decade after I'd made the basic discoveries. They assert that the inclusion of the pseudouridine reduces the inflammatory response. But the data show that is a marginal decrease. And the data also show from their competitor, it's important to remember that they are BioNTech. Katie's a vice president. So their competitor in Germany has shown very good immune response without the pseudouridine. So you're right, pseudouridine is a synthetic compound. The logic is that incorporation of pseudouridine reduces the inflammatory response, but the inflammatory response is still there. And to your point, Richard, we are clearly seeing not only specific effects associated with spike protein, but non-specific effects associated with lipo-nano complexes. How do we know that? Because Moderna gave us a presentation to their stockholders recently where they rolled out their phase one data on their influenza vaccine candidates that are using the same technology platform. So no spike protein associated influenza antigens. And in their hands at the 100 microgram dose, which is the dose that's used in the emergency use authorized vaccines, 90% of the subjects had adverse events compared to 30% in the placebo group. This is phase one data. Now, that data has not been disclosed publicly. It was only disclosed to their stockholders. But what it clearly demonstrates is that the ketonic lipid RNA complexes have intrinsic toxicity above and beyond just that associated with the spike. So when we get into these arguments about is it spike, is it the lipids, blah, 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 it's both, okay? We have a tendency to get binary. It's either this or that. No, it can be both. Regarding the data package from Japan that Byron Bridle first acquired, and then I think I was the first after that. People often get confused about this, but Senator, this is the thing that worries me among the most. is that that limited data that was not produced to any quality standard that any clinical trial, you know, precursor, non-clinical data package I've ever seen would be allowed to be used. What the FDA and the regulatory authorities all over the world allowed was for Pfizer to collect data involving unrelated RNAs, other candidates, amalgamate it together, and submit it as a package. And in those data, which are not according to good laboratory practices, they did demonstrate that these lipid nanoparticles go all over the body, just as Richard is saying, and oddly, they seem to differentially go to ovaries and bone marrow, but ovaries relative to testes. And it's important everybody kind of latches onto this and they say, oh, there's spike protein in the ovaries. No, that's not what they measured. They didn't ever measure spike protein. What they measured was the lipid component, these synthetic lipids, which is the other thing you didn't mention in this cocktail. Okay, these synthetic lipids go to ovaries. Now, who cares? Well, when your child is born, when your daughter is born, she has all the eggs she's ever going to have in her ovaries. And we do know that, and the CDC now finally acknowledges, after women all over the world complaining about their altered menses and getting, I mean, I felt like I was in the mid-20th century. It was attributed to hysteria, much as your own story. These alterations in menstruation were believed to represent hysterical women. The CDC is now acknowledging it. The thing is that the ovary drives menstruation, as Ryan will, I'm sure, attest. Hormonally, the ovary drives menstruation. When we're seeing altered menstrual cycles, we're seeing the phenomena of postmenopausal women starting to bleed. That's a hallmark that something's going on in the ovaries. And we know that these lipids are going to the ovaries. We know that these are synthetic abnormal fats that insert into membranes and change the charge of cell surfaces. That's all true. So all we have is this trail of breadcrumbs. And unfortunately, apparently, the FDA made a determination that they would treat these products using their standard checklist approach for a standard vaccine. And they did not use the checklist that they would use for gene therapy. And furthermore, they didn't make any special accommodation for the novel nature of this technology, which has not been previously characterized. And so what we end up with is the FDA making a decision to move forward with a data package that's grossly inadequate, that doesn't meet any standards at all, that are the norms in my industry that I've been trained on, and that is overlooking known problems. And then when patients are coming, women in particular, and complaining about these reproductive effects, they're being subjected to the same kind of character assassination and ridicule that we all get routinely from our friends Mark Zuckerberg et al. So Senator, I do, in terms of the pediatric, as somebody who is intimately familiar with this technology, I'm not too worried about the untranslated regions, but that's a formal possibility, and it absolutely should have been investigated. And the FDA has been grossly derelict in not following through on these things. But beyond that, we have a clear trail of breadcrumbs about reproductive toxicity that's not being followed up. And I am concerned about our children. I'm concerned about all of those effects, brain, heart, blood coagulation, reproductive system, immunologic system, and furthermore, they're not at risk for this virus. Why are we doing this? And mandating these vaccines for children just breaks my heart.
These total interviews will be up on thesecrettruth.com, so go in there and pick up on those, or you can listen to the excerpts if that's enough for you to listen to. And, you know, you may be more than satisfied with what's going on. This is really ugly stuff. Coming up next is Divine, okay? And she was interviewed about these illegal flights. that are taking place out of the valley of Texas into these countries, these cities, I should say, across the country. And they're individual, adult male individuals who clearly should be returned back to Mexico and not let to immigrate into this country. So here we go with Divine, and she's really good. She's working in conjunction with New York Post. But here we go with her interview right now.
Miranda Devine is with us. Welcome back, Miranda. This is for you. I'm talking about the illegals being flown secretly around the country. It's breaking the law. But you've done extensive reporting on this. This is not the only time this has happened, not just Westchester County, elsewhere as well, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. Yeah, last October, we went and staked out Westchester Airport after a tip-off that these planes were coming in. And we saw three of them come in. We followed the buses. We saw that they were disgorging these illegal migrants at one point into a rest stop in New Jersey to be picked up by supposedly family or so-called sponsors. There didn't seem to be any vetting of these people. I mean, it just looks like a deliberate scam to get as many people away from the southern border as quickly as possible by the federal government so that the optics down there don't look terrible. And they are flying them all over the country, as you said, whether it be California, Louisiana, New York, New Jersey. There are flights going every single day, charter flights, and it is costing, tens of millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars. And last year we had 2 million illegal aliens. You know, if it doesn't accelerate, which it probably will, since people from all over the world are now descending on the southern border, if it doesn't accelerate, you're talking about 8 million by the time Joe Biden is done. That's another New York City or, you know, four Chicagos. This is an invasion. And no wonder that New York City has just recently, or New York has decided to allow non-citizens to vote in their mayoral and local elections.
This should be a major leagues political issue, but in this Democrat Party it's not. I've got to move on, Miranda, because the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is prompting the squad to call for an African-American female nominee, and so is the president. It seems to me there's just another case of, I don't want to downgrade the nominee, but it's just another case of identity politics, isn't it?
Well, exactly, Stuart. Honestly, it worked so well with Kamala Harris that, of course, Joe Biden is going to double down and do it again. But look, I mean, you can sort of see the mentality behind this. You pressure Stephen Breyer to retire, as progressive activists have been doing from the get-go. And then you move Kamala Harris. You can't just fire her. She's been a terrible VP. She's never going to be president. She's deeply unpopular, totally incompetent, out of her depth. And so you can't just get rid of her like you would if she were a straight white male, because she belongs to two protected identity groups. So the only way to save face is to give her a better job, and what better job there is than a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. I mean, it disrespects all the other members of the Supreme Court, but it does give Joe Biden an opportunity to reset his team and put someone in there who's more palatable, who's more plausible as a future president. And I would say if they're smart, they'll go with a moderate, someone like Amy Klobuchar, but he's locked himself into a black woman. So maybe Stacey Abrams.
Okay. My head's spinning. Miranda Devine, thank you very much for being with us this morning. Great stuff.
Coming up next is an interview that Kate Daly did with Christopher Fulton. And Fulton was incarcerated for almost 9 years because of some evidence he had of the JFK. Well, we're going to have the full interview up also, but this is just a small 2-minute clip. But listen carefully, and then I'll end up with a few comments about what Roger Stone said earlier this week. Here we go with Kate Daly and Christopher Fulton.
In 1963, Robert F. Kennedy began his own secret investigation into his brother's assassination. He kept physical evidence of the assassination away from the federal government. He used that evidence to prevent global nuclear war. He trusted two people with his covert agenda: President John F. Kennedy's personal secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, and Secret Service agent Robert Bouck. Following Robert Kennedy's assassination, Bouck and Lincoln became the keepers of his secrets. U.S. presidents have tried to involve themselves in this hidden history. They were besieged by threats and scandals. Following Evelyn Lincoln's death, Robert Kennedy's evidence was transferred into private hands. That transfer was declared a violation of national security. In 1998, the truth was going to be made public. People died in that attempt. One man was viciously prosecuted and brutally imprisoned by the federal government, but he survived. His name is Christopher Fulton. He was the custodian of the closest physical evidence to President Kennedy's fatal head wounds. He is the custodian of President Kennedy's hidden Oval Office recordings. It is time to hear his account. Even though this is Christopher Fulton's story, it is really about all of us. The unparalleled book, The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination, by Christopher and Michelle Fulton, tells that story.
Well, that pretty well ends this first hour for Saturday, January 29th, 2022. And I'm going to make some closing comments here. I did get the red-handed book in, and I've read about half of it so far. And I just came in Thursday, I think, and it's quite a book. It's got 100 pages of end notes. And Peter Schweitzer, he's really a fine individual, and he put out a very good book. And it's a really big indictment. 36 pages alone concerned the Bidens and the connections that they had, and Hunter Biden's connections with all of these different high-up Chinese, you could say, business, intelligence, government, communists, Chinese Communist Party members. They're all, the lines are blurred, see. And they blurred the lines intentional so they could come in and appear to be a business, to business people in this country, and steal our secrets. The intellectual property theft is horrendous. They don't care about America. And so we've got to stand firm with China and call them out on this and quit just rolling over. But, you know, Schweitzer reiterates that statement that Lenin said years ago during the Bolshevik Revolution, or soon after that, when they consolidated their power, about that we'll hang the West with the rope they sold us. So basically, the Chinese have used the same techniques. They know American businessmen hunger after the God Almighty dollar, and they have bought up most of our top billionaires, much less millionaires. They've made just hacks into millionaires, and they've made our billionaires traitors to this country. And so that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with a very treacherous hierarchy, the elitist, who are in bed with the Chinese. Yale in China was an early initiative by the University of Yale to go into China and start recruiting. And they put male saitons with some of their schools over there early on. So what is really going on over there? They're all in bed with each other. They want to bring about world communism, and I stand firmly against them. Thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you.